Hey everyone, I've got another episode of the Road to Revenue series. Today's episode is about a question that I've been getting a lot lately. What is the difference between a coach and a mentor? Well, I'll tell you, it's not $500. Tweet me at David Meltzer your favorite takeaway from today's episode and check the show notes to see how you can contact me at any time.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Hey, hey. Good afternoon. Good morning, everyone. It is Friday training, and today's training is a question that a lot of people ask me. What is the difference between a coach and a mentor? What does it take to find and be a coach and to be coached or mentored? Few little housekeeping. Remember, everyone, if you miss it or want to share this, it's on the playbook. Go ahead, download it, share it on Spotify, Entrepreneur, on every platform, Apple, Google, etc. You can check it out. You also can try out for season 3 of 2-Minute Drill, $50,000 of cash and prizes. Books, exercises, guides, and this training are always free. David at dmeltzer.com. Put your questions in. We'll have a Q&A session at the end, as always, one of my favorite things to do. So make sure you fill up the Q&A section with all the questions, whether you're on IG, Clubhouse, or here on the training webinar. Thank you, everyone. Next week's training is on time management. So if you're interested in any of those tricks, trades of time management, we'll be going through those. All right. First of all, the difference between a coach and a mentor. A coach is someone that brings the best out of you. A mentor is someone that gives the best of themselves. That's the easiest way that I put it. I used to say the difference between a coach and a mentor is about $500 an hour. But the truth is, a coach is someone that can bring the best out of you. A mentor is someone that can give you their best, meaning the situational knowledge, relationships, etc. And there is a purpose and a place for each of those. John Wooden, the coach of UCLA, probably the greatest college basketball coach of all time, he defined a coach as a coach is someone who can give correction without resentment. Part of the ability to bring the best out in others is to be constructive with suggestions of improvement. And this is a very difficult thing to do as a leader, a coach, and able to bring out the best in someone, to inform them, give them correction, constructive correction, so you want to make sure that we are aligned with somebody's temperament, because different people in different places and different times have different things that may have a need to be offended. And maybe when we are giving correction without resentment, part of it is coaching not to have resentment. So setting the stage, managing expectations of those people that we coach of what they're going to do and how we do it, so that there's no need to be offended or resentful about us being here for them. I will give you an example. In my business, I always say, people are like, oh man, you're micromanaging me, Dave. Why are you so hard on me? What are we doing? And I say, well, I would be more worried if I wasn't. Right? If I wasn't giving you correction, that I wasn't paying attention to making you better. And you know, that's what a coach is here to do, to bring the best out of you, to find your higher self, to make you better. So what does it take to be a good coach? Besides giving correction without resentment, as John Wooden states, a good coach needs to be consistent in his time. So you need to be consistent. You need to be the exemplary person to be there on time when you have a commitment to being a coach. Two, you need to be consistent with interest, making sure that you can't sway from not caring to caring. You need to be consistent in your behavior. You need to be consistent in your opinions. You need to be consistent in your feedback. You need to be consistent in your suggestions. You need to ensure that your own worries, tensions, deadlines, and obstacles do not interfere with you as a coach. You cannot bring your own emotional aspect, your own difficulties, interferences, voids, and shortages when you're a coach to the coaching. You need to be consistent to inspire the persistent behavior in others. And a lot of coaches don't know why they can't convey what the people they're trying to inspire with, they're not responding. And usually it stems from this problem. They're not consistent in time, interest, behavior, opinions, feedbacks, and suggestion. And they bring too much of their own baggage to the table. Now, what does it take to be a good mentor? Remember, coach is someone that brings the best out of you. A mentor is someone that gives the best of themselves. So there's no simple definition of what makes a good mentor because it's coming out of you, nor a single guide for becoming one. Mentors can be bosses, colleagues, teachers, peers, friends, or just about anyone who has the experience, the situational knowledge, the determination, and most importantly, I believe the temperament to be a helpful guide, to be able to utilize that knowledge, skills, and desire to effectuate giving directions to somebody else. Completely different perception as far as being coached or mentored. And, you know, some people are just good mentors. Some people are extraordinary coaches. And then some people can do both. And that's where I try to hang out, is to be able to be consistent enough to bring the best out of people, to be motivational and also inspirational by being a great mentor, sharing all the dummy tax that I've paid to others so that they don't have to pay that dummy tax. There's enough federal and state taxes for people to pay. We don't have to pay the dummy tax when somebody else has already paid it. They're happy to give it to you. Now, what does it mean to have a great coach? For others, success may be something different than what we perceive as a coach to be success. It could be becoming fit, conquering a fear, or simply stepping outside our comfort zone. Nonetheless, a great coach is someone who recognizes what version of success is and goes out of his or her way to help the athletes, students, etc., achieve everything they're aiming for. Remember, when you're coaching, you're bringing the best out of that person. Therefore, you need to align with their goals, their personal values, experiential values, giving values, and receiving values in order to align with what success, what they're looking for as they pursue their potential, and you're raising the bar to achieve that potential yourself for them through you. What are the attributes of a good coach? The attributes of a good coach is a positive, enthusiastic, supportive, trusting, focused, goal-oriented, knowledgeable, observant, respectful, patient, and clear. Now, let's see how those all come into the workplace. Take positive, for example, because positive is a subjective perception. A lot of times when someone's coaching, they feel as if they are being positive. Just take a simple task of being late. How do we convey as a coach to be on time? Is it positive if we point out that they're late? Or is it positive if we show the impact or reasons to be on time? Or is it positive if we talk about, you know, looking at the capabilities of being late? All of these different things go into the attributes of being a coach. I would say energetically align with the enthusiastic, supportive, and trusting side. Being positive is very subjective. Goal-oriented, making sure we're communicating that, are the attributes of a good coach, with gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and of course, that ability to effectively communicate. Now, comparatively, what's the good attributes of a mentor? A good mentor possesses the qualities of, number one, willingness to share their skills with as little ego as possible. So just being able to share the skills with humility, not over-exaggerating or glossing over the actual lessons that need to be learned in order to effectuate what they were experiencing in order to achieve what they have. They have to be able to share their knowledge. You know, a lot of times it's not what we say, it's what they hear. A lot of times a mentor is ineffective because they're looking to tell somebody something, or they're looking for people to listen to them instead of understanding what people, their mentees, are looking or listening for. Completely different perspective in speaking is what you're listening for, not wanting people to listen to you. A good mentor is willing to teach what he or she knows and accept the mentee where they currently are in their development. Acceptance of mentees and coaches, acceptance of mentors and coaches, These are important things. We need to have an acceptance of where everyone is in order to demonstrate the positive attitude and the acts so that we can represent a positive role model in order to do so. So in order to do this, what skills do we have to develop to make a good leader as a coach? And a coach is a leader. Leader as a coach is a serious role. Effective coaches do not minimize the importance of coaching to the people that they coach. They don't minimize. When you're a leader as a coach, you can't minimize that role. It has to be a priority. It has to be to an energetic level of inspiration to those people that you are coaching to. And that consistent behavior is so important to give people that trust and inspiration and the positive enforcement that they need. Emotional intelligence. Successful coaches are able to manage the emotions. They not only allow people to control their mindset and give them tools in order to effectuate controlling the mindset, but also the heart set of how they feel. One of the things that I've learned as a coach is that we cannot change the way people feel by logic. You know, when you're not feeling well, it doesn't help when someone tells you they feel sorry for you or don't feel bad because we can even tell ourselves with logic when we're not feeling the way we want to feel to change the way we feel. But in emotional intelligence, it doesn't work. It doesn't work to use logic to change the way that we feel. What works is action. And so a coach's job utilizing the emotional intelligence, one, to be aware of the emotional misalignment or interference or voids or shortages or resistance, but actually giving a positive activity because action is what resolves feelings. Creating action resolves feelings, not logic. And so what skills do we need then to be a good mentor, right? A coach as a leader needs to have this EQ, this emotional intelligence. They can't minimize the importance. They have to be consistent. But the skills of a good mentor are a little different. Number one, you don't need any background to be a good coach. You know, I've seen some tremendous coaches that could not play the game that they were coaching, but they were able somehow to bring the best out of people and to find out how to do that and what to do with them. A mentor has to have relevant background because they're giving of themselves. They have to have situational knowledge, that experience, and even relationship capital in order to be a good mentor. You can't give something you don't have. Now, enthusiasm is connected in this case, not enthusiasm in the trust in the ability and inspiration or motivation of an athlete or a student, but or associate, but enthusiasm for sharing their expertise is just as important as a mentor as having the expertise. So, you know, one of the gifts of being a mentor is not only knowing the directions, but being enthusiastic about teaching and telling the directions. And that takes an authenticity. It takes a sincere ability to want more for somebody else than you want for yourself. To understand that when we elevate others, we elevate ourselves. And so many mentors just focus in on their expertise and their background, and they don't realize that the enthusiasm to communicate or share their expertise has to equal or be greater than their expertise itself. And this is a respectful attitude that I believe is missing a lot of times in mentorship, is that, you know, we feel separation, inferiority or superiority when people are coaching or mentoring us. And that creates separation. It creates interference. It creates a negative vibration. It actually deters us from being not only motivated to get up, get back up, get started, get back started, but inspired to get us there. You have to have that eagerness to invest in others, to elevate themselves. Let's go down a list of a few things, and you might want to grab your pens and papers because this applies to being a parent, a coach, a mentor, et cetera. A good coach and mentor is self-aware. So awareness is the ability to vibrate faster than that which you see. meaning that you have to be self-aware. You cannot be aware of anything that vibrates lower than or less than you. To understand oneself, one's different coaching style, and how it can be perceived and received by the employees is a critical first step to becoming a valuable and effective coach. Self-awareness is a journey unto itself, and we will talk about how we become aware of what's going on within ourselves so that we can elevate and liberate others to show their life and be aware, light and be aware as well. We also need to bring specific and well-defined issues to others' attentions. When you're unspecific as a mentor or a coach, and these problem areas that people have, these challenges, voids and shortages, when we fail to bring them up to those that we are helping, it suggests a reluctance to affect the positive change, and it's a lack of leadership. So you have to be comfortable to bring specific and well-defined issues to the awareness of others. And we can't do that if we don't have the awareness ourselves. If we don't have the ability to see in others what we see in ourselves, or have those past mistakes, dummy tacks, situational knowledge of being able to convey with vulnerability and humility the specific situations in which we have to bring up, you will only be more credible. And look, if someone's not ready, they're not going to listen anyway. And so, you know, a lot of times when I'm mentoring or coaching, I may say something and I can't control your feelings. And if you're not ready to hear it, then we'll deal with that, why you're not ready to hear it, more than what we're hearing. And that means that a coach needs to prepare for each session with information, examples, ideas, etc., ready for discussion, which is why I have notes, which is why you see my eyes moving down. So I come prepared with all the different ideas that I have and utilize the best ability that I can to convey. And so we want to make sure that we have structure and agenda and outline and layouts. All of these different things are much more valuable than just a casual conversation of no substance or direction. I use free flowing hot seat coaching in order to get the specific questions that are free flowing. But when we're teaching about coaching versus mentoring, when we're trying to figure out how do we bring the best out of other people and give the best of ourselves to other people with the ultimate goal of motivation and inspiration to get them there more accurately and more rapidly, to make more money, help more people, and have more fun, which is my mission of doing these trainings for 20 years, right? To empower others simply to be happy. A good coach also treats individuals as partners and associates, right? We work with people, not for them, encouraging their input and trusting them to carry out the action items or assignments, homework, etc., that we give them. Some coaches are fans of tough love, while others are more lenient. But what all good coaches have in common is respect. And contempt and resentment have no place in effective coaching relationship. They just breed more conflict, more resistance. So I think it's important, you know, to tell the truth, to know where your comfort zone is in that area of tough love, but you have to have a mutual respect. You have to have this alignment of I am here in the best interest of both of us in order to effectuate your pursuit of your potential. And we need to remind people at times when we may say things or teach things that are difficult, that there is a purpose behind it, one that we're aligned on with complete mutual respect. A good coach also knows their own strengths and weaknesses as well as others. A coach in sports, for example, knows how to tap in to the individual strength and get the greatest amount of productivity from the team collectively and individually. One of the things that I've learned from a mentor of mine is that we move some weaknesses. Instead of trying to change the weakness, we see first if we can move it to another place. And so utilizing that, let me give you an example. SAP had a problem. They could not find enough testers for their software. And the reason they could is it was hard to find human beings that like to do the exact same thing over and over and over again. And it was going to be a really difficult thing because they couldn't figure out how many employees it took to give the variance that they wouldn't have to just test software all day that they could give them other duties and responsibilities, but the more efficiencies were in finding somebody that could sit there for 8 hours and test software. And so the CEO of SAP goes home. His child was autistic, a little bit on the spectrum, and he's watching him as he's perplexed over this problem of where he's going to find people to do this. And he realizes that his son loves to do things over and over and over again. And to this day, thousands of people who are on the spectrum have been hired by SAP to test their software, empowering them, giving them self-worth and value, a positive experience, because they took what other people saw as a weakness and turned it into a strength by moving it, not by changing it. Every weakness can be utilized as a strength if put into the right position. A good coach or mentor also makes the expectations clear at the beginning, not during. So at the very beginning, a coachee or a mentor and a mentee have a sense that they have a distinct purpose, and they have to agree on what the purpose is before they proceed in their session smoothly. And that purpose is so important because it is the purpose that needs to exceed the pain of growing and learning. And growing and learning does have pain, but pain is just an indicator that you have a better place to be in a better situation, which is what the alignment and communication of those expectations should be. A good coach also allows enough time to adequately discuss issues and concerns. So we have to have sessions where we allow people to speak up on what their concerns are, what their issues are, and be able to take those and apply them to what we're teaching and not rush through just telling people what they should know, but allow them to be more interested than interesting, to ask questions, to bring back feedback, issues, and concerns. We want our mentees and students to be a part of the conversation, a part of the situation. They want to make sure we understand their point of view. That will only enhance us as coaches. And rather than just assigning blame, shame, or justification and delivering unhelpful criticism, we need to allow them to explain the things from their point of view and then uncover and root the misunderstandings and miscommunications in order to improve upon their perspective of where they're at and where they want to be. A good coach expresses encouragement and optimism when both easy and difficult issues are discussed. So, you know, nobody wants to talk about the elephant in the room, but you need to. And it's our job to make it less intimidating and constructive and utilize optimism with small and big issues, difficult and easy issues to address. We need a commitment to the solutions that have been agreed upon. So it's not just good enough to teach and to learn. We need to make a commitment to what? Changing our feelings, changing our mindset by taking action. And we need to not only agree upon that action, but hold each other accountable in a consistent, persistent manner in order to effectuate the productivity, the accessibility, and gratitude that we're looking for. Also, a good coach provides the resources, authority, training, and support necessary for others to carry out their solution. Coaching doesn't end when the session ends. If a coach is to follow through with any additional guidance, then we must utilize a plan to move forward, utilizing authority, training, support, resources, relationships to assist people throughout the process. When I'm coaching and mentoring, I have accountability sessions, but I'm available 7 days a week to make sure that I, real time, like a sideline coach, can effectuate bringing the best out of you and sharing my situational knowledge if an audible needs to be called. A good coach offers support and assistance to those that he or she is coaching to help them implement change and achieve desired goals. Professional development is a team effort. It's usually not wise to simply cut one of the people free after a session and expect them to achieve everything on their own. We need to set up a support system and accountability system in order to effectuate what we're trying to achieve in the coaching or mentoring. And understanding that that follow-up, accountability, team support is just as important as the lessons themselves. we need to follow up in a timely manner. We need to manage expectations. It's too easy for coaching to fall down a priority ladder and forgetting how important it is when we have day-to-day activities to do. We have three different coaching sessions every single week, not only for internal but external use. We start on Mondays. We have, of course, our Ask Me Anything Mondays. We go to Wednesday, and of course, we have More Good News Wednesday. And then we are loaded from 5 a.m. on Friday with all types of different sessions in order to effectuate the continuity that it takes in order to support and transpire the changes that we want. That's because consistent, persistent behavior, the exponentiality of doing things every single day, 2 minutes of coaching a day is worth more than 2 hours on a Saturday. I will guarantee you that. When solutions do not turn out as expected, a good coach proactively helps to define alternative actions. We are angling towards what we want with faith that we're going to end up somewhere better. So we need to manage expectations. One, that pain is an indicator that it's just going to tell us that we have a better direction to go in. But we need to assess the situation and have people act accordingly to make the adjustments, the pivots necessary to maximize the opportunity to grow, learn, and achieve according to the objectives that were defined at the beginning of the session or beginning of the relationship. And we need to have those mile markers, milestones in order to quantitatively see where and what we're doing and how we can do it better. Finally, how do you become a good coach or a mentor? Invest into the relationship. Become a good mentor or a coach is a commitment of time and resources. You have the right to expect certain things from your coaching players or mentees or students, and accountability and the willingness to take action. That's all I ask. You need to be accountable and you need to be willing to take action. You need to be willing to do your best, to learn something, and to have fun. You also must invest the time in the relationship and the follow through by being there when people need you. You need not only be productive as a coach or a mentor to provide value and service to those that you are helping, but you need to be accessible. Not only accessible to them, but accessing the resources that you need in order to give to them. And if you can do that in a gracious way, you will find the light, the love, and the lessons in every single person that you mentor or coach. Whether you're a mentor, whether you're a coach, or either or both, a coach is going to bring the best out of you, and a mentor is going to give the best of themselves. Let's do our best to support one another. A coach and a mentor can liberate us to liberate others, liberate our light to liberate the light in others, empower us to empower others. I'm on a mission to empower over 1,000 people to be happy through coaching and mentorship, to find 1,000 people that will empower 1,000 people, to empower 1,000 people. 1,000 times 1,000 is a million times 1,000 is a billion. All right, everyone, let's take some Q&A. I got a few announcements. Don't forget, you can download this on the playbook, featured everywhere. You can get my books, my guides to this. Get the guide on coach versus mentor. Go ahead, email me, david@dmeltzer.com. While you're emailing me, feel free to request a book. I'll sign my book, send them out, give them to you, audio, ebook, and printed book. Doesn't matter. Please ask me. Remember, next week's training is time management. Let's load up the questions. We got ton in there. We're taking them. How do I set up a one-on-one with you? Email me. Anybody that we have free coaching, we have private group coaching, we have one-on-one coaching and business consulting, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I believe coaches should only work month to month with people and guarantee success, profitability. And so that's what I do. I mitigate all risk with anyone I work for. Please sign up, get on our list. David@dmeltzer.com. I have patented speed and endurance training tool that I like for a pro football team to test for free. No strings attached for 30 days. The tough part is how to approach the team or facility during COVID. Any suggestions on how to execute this and to stay protected with some type of written agreement? Thank you in advance. You and your family stay blessed. Okay. You need to, number one, make sure that you have the appropriate credibility in order to effectuate even a free test with the highest level teams, leagues, organizations with a training tool. So just because it's patented doesn't mean it's credible. So if you have enough credibility to be able to articulate the quantitative value with that credibility to exceed the time, resources, and money that it takes to have them do a free test, then you're ready to take it to the biggest leagues, pro football, the NFL. If not, you need to start at a level where you do have credibility, gather the data to increase your credibility so that you can quantify and then articulate the quantification of the value to make sure that you have success. So many people, you know, I'll give you an example. I had an intern of mine graduate law school, and there was the general counsel position for the Chicago Cubs or Texas Rangers, I forget, available. And she came up to me immediately and goes, "Please, Dave, I know you know the owner of the team. Please recommend me for the general counsel job." And I wouldn't do it because, number one, you know, there's been people that have been practicing law, assistant general counsels for Major League Baseball teams, all types of people that are just more credible, more qualified. And all I would be doing is diminishing my credibility, my situational knowledge and experience that I would even present someone that's not qualified for a position. And if your solution is not qualified, then it doesn't matter who knows who, you're not going to get that opportunity if it's not credible. If it's credible, no problem. If you're able to not only show and illustrate that quantitative value, but also articulate it, then you're all set to take it to the next level. All right, we'll bring up Joey Dominic, my friend. I'm going to answer another quick question as he comes up. What does your purpose needs to be greater than your pain mean? So purpose greater than your pain. When there's a pain in your life, a mistake, a failure, a pain, there's a lesson to be learned. In order to learn that lesson, in order to be motivated and inspired, you need to have the thoughts of purpose to be greater than the thoughts of pain, or you're going to quit. Pain, if your purpose is not greater than your pain, pain becomes a stop sign, not a turn signal. Pain becomes a stop sign, setting you back, shrinking your comfort zone and your learning zone. If pain then has purpose greater than the pain, you will expand and grow, and pain will then become a turn signal to you to a better place, a better situation, etc. All right, let's bring up Joey. Joey, you ready?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Dave? Thank you, Jake, as well.
Awesome. What's your question, my friend?
So I was listening to what you were saying about accountability on your live on LinkedIn, and it struck a chord because, like, so I remember in earlier conversations, you were like, you know, you can choose your friends, you can't choose your family, unfortunately, but, like, what if you inherit a team that you now have to lead? And you're trying to stress accountability, and like there's so many ways to cut the cookie. There's cookie cutters. There's all types of different instruments, tools, and ways of going about things. But how do you stress accountability? And embedded in them, like to understand, like here's this SOP. Here's how things should be, and here's how you need to be accountable instead of making excuses. Like, I run into that daily, and it just, like, it's one of those things. It's like, I feel like a broken record having to stress it. I feel like there has to be a different way of, like, especially like in like, obviously my full-time job is government. And so like, and coming from, you know, where I work in government, it's kind of like hard to, like, I feel like I have to find a more creative way outside of explaining it in a coloring book and handing them crayons to probably read and understand. But sometimes like, and I'm being facetious, but I'm like,
No. So accountability to me is the most common, especially in the, you know, employment realm, is the most commonly value that people struggle with. You know, that most people are gracious unless they're in a bad place. Most people are forgiving, although less than grateful. But accountability is an occurrence that needs to be reminded and taught every day. And so the way that I have done it is, you know, number one is we have to go ahead and put the right energy and enthusiasm behind the exhaustion of saying the same thing over and over again, and understand that we must not be effectively communicating what it is. And what I've learned, the easiest way to communicate accountability is, instead of saying, you know, you're below the line, that's blame, shame, and justification, is when someone is in blame, shame, justification, what I talk about responsibility, liability mindset, not accountability mindset, is I actually ask them the two questions. And that solves and makes it such a positive experience. So when someone's being below the line, when they're living in blame, shame, and justification, I simply say, what did you learn from this? You know, what did you do to attract this to yourself? What are the lessons in this? Right? And when you do that, you then inherently bring accountability and control to what it is and shift them out of the liability mindset into the accountability mindset by empowering them with the control of accountability, by asking them, what did they do and what are they supposed to learn from it? Separating themselves from the blame, the shame, and the justification. So if you can find the patience in order to effectuate not responding in the same like-mindedness of, you know, the same repetitive, you're below the line, you know, you need to be accountable, take control. Instead of telling them, allow them to find it themselves and teach them themselves by asking those simple questions of what did they do and what are they supposed to learn from it? Okay?
That was amazingly beautiful. And now I can't wait till Monday.
Awesome. It will work, my friend. Let me know. Christina Madrigal, you will be up next. Let me take a quick question from online. What makes a bad coach or a mentor? You know, I think inconsistency. You know, a bad coach or a mentor is inconsistent and negative. They think that they can focus in on what's missing, what they don't like, what other people want for them, and somehow it magically appears. In fact, all they're doing is bringing more energy to what they don't want. A bad coach or a mentor is someone that's negative and inconsistent. And if you find you're with a coach or a mentor that's negative or inconsistent, go ahead, allow them to fall away or fire them from your life. We only want coaches and mentors that feed us, not bleed us. All right, Christina, you're up.
Hello. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Good Friday.
Good Friday. And I just have to do a quick call out. Joey just said, I'm looking forward to Monday. Like, how you are making people looking forward to not only Fridays with you, but Mondays. Like, that's amazing. So thank you so much.
And you can look forward to Wednesdays too, because I've redefined Wednesdays. Everybody thought as Wednesdays as hump day. I redefined it as more good news Wednesday. So I look forward to more good news halfway through the week.
Yeah. We're just redefining all the days of the week. I love it. Okay. So question related to this topic is, what is your advice or what would you tell somebody who's starting out as a coach? Because I've heard you say times before that, like, you know, to be a coach, you have to have like a track record. And if you're just starting out, you don't necessarily have the track record, but you have the training or you've been on the planet, you know, you've been learning lessons. What would you say to somebody in that starting out phase? Thank you.
Well, you know, that was the importance of the training too, is that the difference between a mentor and a coach. So a mentor definitely has to have a track record. They have to have situational knowledge and experience, some relationship capital in order to effectuate giving something, because a mentor is giving of themselves. Where a coach just have the ability to bring the best out of you. And you know, to do that, they have to have more emotional intelligence. They have to be an effective communicator. They have to understand the difference between motivation that gets us up, gets us back up, gets us started, get us back started, compared to inspiration, which will get you there. I don't think you can get there just with a coach. You need a mentor, someone to give you the directions, and the situational knowledge and relationships to accelerate that. But anyone can be a coach without a track record, and anyone can actually find people that need the situational knowledge. Once you have lived life, there's something, and I always say, if you want to get started coaching or mentoring, find the things that people tell you, how do you do that? Oh, that's amazing. Even if it seems easy to you, when someone's like, wow, that's awesome. I love the backdrop on your podcast. That's amazing. You know, you actually could coach or mentor someone on creating backdrops or green screens for podcasts or for sets. And those are the things that we look at that is easy, that gives us the credibility and the confidence to be a positive empowerment tool to other people, to elevate them, to elevate others. So one, I think distinguishing coaching and mentoring, starting with the people that you hold dearest into the capabilities, skills, knowledge, and desire that you have and are able to give those to others or inspire them to give it to others or inspire them to be their higher self or better self by utilizing emotional intelligence, consistent, positive enforcement and support for others. Does that sound fair?
so fair and so on fire. Thank you so much. This is amazing.
All righty. Well, we are fair and on fire. Okay, we're going to bring up, as I ask this next question, Terry Thompson, you're up next. Let me ask one question here online. Somebody else asked, they want to be a mentee. Just email me if you want to be a mentee or a coaching student. I have from free to one-on-one stuff. Just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. What lessons have you learned this week? I had Sadhguru on my podcast, and he taught me a great lesson that I love. We were talking about living a long life, and he said, you know, Dave, how do you live a long life? I said, take care of your health. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. And the key is to prioritize your own health by figuring out what interferes with your health, because you are healthy, wealthy, and happy. Figure out what's interfering with that. And he said, well, health is important for a long embodiment, but if you want to understand length of time and the perception of time and the continuity of time, there's two ways to live a long life. One, which was surprising to me, is to be miserable. I'm like, what? How are you living a long life if you're miserable? He said, think about it. When you're miserable, time goes so slow. So one of the ways to live a long life is to be miserable. The other way is to be productive, to be of service and value. When we're productive, we bring the most value to time, which extends out our legacy or our existence. And so if you want to live a long life, you make the choice, either be miserable or productive. I choose productive. One of the greatest lessons I've learned this week. Here we go. Terry Thompson, what's going on?
Hey, David, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. You know, I always tell everybody it's Monday. So when you believe every day is Monday, every day is a great day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I got a quick question here about dealing with clients with narcissism. So I love the fact that you talk about ego and ego-based, doing things ego-based. So when dealing with a client who has narcissism, egos tend to clash. How do you deal with clashing egos or avoid clashing egos?
Two ways. One is understanding. Two is praying for happiness. So what we need to do is to see and focus in on the commonalities. And this is true about the separation that's occurring today in all aspects of what we're doing. So meaning that when we look for the things that we have the same, and then appreciate the differences, that's called understanding, alignment, finding synergistic supplementary values within what we are doing. With two large egos, we have to allow them first to make themselves equal, then make themselves different. And when we make ourselves different with those egos, we cannot have them not appreciate those differences. We can't have them accelerate the separation, the inferiority or superiority that the ego may force upon them in their perception. So for me, what I do is, number one, I utilize understanding to find the similarities, to make ourselves the same, and then use happiness or the focus or perspective on a positive attitude. I call it praying for happiness, so that each of the egotistical, narcissistic parties appreciate or pray for the happiness or add value to the differences. And so when we're managing two big egos in that respect, let's make ourselves equal, then appreciate the differences. And if you take this type of approach, you will find statistical success, that we are able to align those emotions, to lessen the resistance, the voids, the obstacles, the shortages that these egos that have a need to be right, a need to be offended, inferior, superior, separate, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, all of those great traits that we see in these big narcissistic egos that we're trying to manage. And once we bring the commonality and connectedness and remind them that a tree doesn't have any branches, one branch should not be fighting against the other branch, let's all find the tree within ourselves, the similarities, the sameness, the equalness, and then learn through happiness to appreciate those differences. And we'll pray for that amongst ourselves and to and through each other. Does that sound fair, Terry?
That is absolutely fair. Appreciate it. Thank you, man. Have a great weekend, by the way.
Happy Monday. You too. Easter Monday. You heard it here first. Awesome. Next up, I'm going to get another question from a line. I'm not sure if it's my friend, Robert Smith. I got like two different Robert Smiths I know. One played football in the NFL, and the other is an extraordinary philanthropist. I'm sure there's many Robert Smiths in the world, but give me 1 second to answer this here. What strategies are the hardest for you to teach others? The hardest strategy to teach others is to practice ending fear. What happens is that we are so far in our way. Number one, we can't give ourselves egoectomy. So we're always going to have the challenge of those needs of the ego, the primary needs of the ego, the secondary needs of the ego. And it's so hard to teach people to control their emotions, their energy and motion created by the control of the mindset, the heart set, and then effectuated into a conscious continuum of what we think, say, do, believe, and the actions that we have. And the part of the reason that it's so difficult to teach is that everyone's different in their quantum nature. Everybody has different characteristics, personalities. They have different obsessions and addictions that have been handed down genetically for 4 generations or spiritually for multiple lifetimes, if you believe in that. But the strategy is to, instead of trying to resist all of these different primary and secondary ego-based emotions and teach others to resist it, to go over it, under it, through it, around it, to try to lie to it and cheat it and manipulate it and oversell and back and sell it, the hardest thing to teach them is just stop. Just stop and find your center and find your peace, and to understand that that feeling of ego will never go away. So what we want to do is focus in on time in order to spend minutes and moments in that feeling, and not weeks, days, months, and years that most people do, wasting time, emotion, energy, resources, and relationships, and more importantly, even money. All are an effect of the hardest thing to teach strategy-wise to people is to spend minutes and moments in our own way. If we can teach people as a strategy to get out of their own way and to use that law of Goya, getting off their ass, being persistent, and blending it with allowance and patience by getting out of their own way, realizing what they are connected to and through, it would be amazing. But it is the hardest thing to teach other people because it's the hardest thing to do ourselves, and we can't give what we don't have. All right, the great philanthropist and podcast host, Robert Smith, what do you got for me?
Hey, how's it going, Davey? First and foremost.
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just finished a morning walk. It's sunny in California right now, so I'm feeling great. I want to first and foremost just thank you so much for creating a room that can especially utilize to uplift people and to motivate them in ways that probably they haven't happened before. So thank you so much. And with that being said, I can kind of just relate into the last thing you mentioned of just kind of just myself being a barrier or obstacle in my life of stopping myself to reach your potential. And, you know, that can occur from many of things, from insecurities. I guess that's the main source of my issue at hand. And, just kind of like figuring out where to go as well. I'm 32 years old. I just celebrated my birthday last week. Unfortunately, I had just got let go from a job because it was on a contract base. And I'm just trying to figure out where's my next step? What do I do? What's going on? How do I continue to overcome my obstacle at head? How do I tackle that? I look at other people, and I know this is really bad. I hate to be just so transparent about it, but when I see other people my age and I see them just thriving and just being successful, of course, I want to be like that. And I don't come from a jealousy aspect, but I just want to say, how do I continue to reach that point? Am I too late? Or am I too going to continue to be successful? Yeah, that's just where I'm at right now. Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. So first of all, comparison is the thief of joy. So only place that we want to look is within to find what we want outside of ourselves. And in order to do that, I have those 5 daily practices, which I'm happy to send a guide to anyone along with my book. But the 5 daily practices, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I'll send it to you. These are all free, so don't worry. david@dmeltzer.com if you want these 5 daily practices. But here's what you have to do to look with inside of us so that we can manifest what's outside of us. Number one, you have to take inventory of your what. Know your what. What do I want personally, experientially, giving and receiving wise? What is it I want? Don't worry about the why. Don't worry about how you're going to get it. Just simply figure out what you want every day. And don't be afraid of changing your mind. Your life is about snapshots. Your parents, your friends from high school, your friends from elementary school, your friends from work, all have a different snapshot of you. They all have determined who you are by those snapshots. You are not who they think you are. You are who you are today, defined by these five daily practices of number one, you are what you want. And then when you define what you are by what you want, personally, experientially, giving wise and receiving wise, then you need to find your who. Know your who. Who has it? That's what we're talking about today. What coach or mentor has it in order to give me directions on how to get it? That's the fastest way to do it and the cheapest way to do it. Three, know your how. I utilize, you know, student in my calendar, just being a student in general, the mathematical equation of luck, paying attention to, giving intention to all the coincidences I want, but I know my how. And I make a plan to be happy where I'm at, angle to what I want, and have faith I'll end up somewhere better. But even more importantly, I do things now. I know my now. I have a system of prioritization. I mostly use Eisenhower's matrix of importance versus urgency to determine according to my what, my who, and my how, exactly what I'm doing now. And if I can't do it now, I put it somewhere to do it later. But I have a repository to effectuate, always continually evaluating what's most important to me according to my what. So in no time in my life can I tell you I don't know what I want or where I want to go or what this. It's always the first thing I do is to know my what, my who, my how, and my now. Then we can get into the last practice, which we always talk about, the practice of getting out of our own way, being a ferocious Buddha, stopping, dropping, and rolling, staying and understanding primary and secondary fears so that we get the most efficient power of what we're already connected to and through with the appreciation, the gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration that we've been gifted with, that we are health, wealth, and happiness. What are we doing to interfere with it? So my dear friend, Robert Smith, you need to just know your what, continue to who has it, figure out the how by paying attention and giving intention to those coincidences, doing thing now, prioritizing importance versus urgency, and get out of your own way. Practice ending that fear that's interfering with what you already have. And I promise you rapidly and accurately, you will get what you want and know what you want every single day. You are a snapshot of today and you will be a snapshot of tomorrow. And I like what I see. Thanks so much, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is the part where I say book coming soon, but you're already an author. So I got to definitely check it out. But thank you so much for your feedback. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. Email me if you want my book, david@dmelter.com. It's free. I'll sign it, pay for shipping. All right. Last question. I'm going to take one online and one on Clubhouse. Jerome Grazioli, you will come up next. Let me answer this quick question here. What is the best recent memory that you have? Well, I'm blessed because every day I have recent memories. And the best one from today was Clubhouse. And on Clubhouse, 6 a.m. Pacific time, we're blessed to be in the Breakfast of Champions every single week on Clubhouse. And we talked about a new nuance. You know, I always say I don't work. I have activity I get paid for and activity I don't get paid for. But I study words. And the word that I was studying for today, my most and best recent memory is occupation. I have redefined the activity I get paid for and the activity I don't get paid for simply by defining the word occupation. What occupies me and raising my awareness, my intention and attention to what occupies me? What is truly my occupation and how much of my occupation am I getting paid for and how much of my occupation am I not getting paid for? What is occupying me? What I want, my snapshots, or am I occupying myself with what other people want with me or what I don't want or what's missing? So create the great occupation for yourself and occupy yourself with what you want and make your possibilities your probabilities and your probabilities your perspective or reality. All right, time for one last question. The incredible Jerome Grazioli, what's going on?
Hey, David, thanks for taking my my question.
You're welcome.
So my question is related to what you and Robert were just talking about. You had mentioned your five key points there. And the first one is something I've been struggling with. So I just got a new job. I graduated from law school and sort of had to go down this route of financial compliance. And, you know, I'm at a bank and, you know, it's a good job. It's a good, you know, it's a very stable career path. And, you know, I mean, that's, you know, I feel like direct conflict or contrast with entrepreneurship and the kind of life that you've led. And so the thing I'm curious about is, I know that I want to make a transition at some point and pivot my life in a similar direction to, you know, a lot of the people on Clubhouse, you know, are looking for and looking to do. And so my question was, how did you figure out what you wanted? How did you figure out that first point that you were telling Robert about? What did you do to arrive at that?
Yeah, I utilized radical humility to arrive at it. What does that mean? I realized that I was lying to myself by searching for something I love to do. That, you know, and I started to realize it as people like, oh, you're so lucky. You've always loved what you did. And I'm starting to think, man, I must be a masochist because I don't know what the F they're talking about. I loved what I did to get there, my first million or to my multi-millions or to my bankruptcy or to the job with Lee Steinberg or being the CEO of the first smartphone or whatever they think it was. It wasn't. It was that I had learned from wherever and whoever at a young age and then developed that and continue it through it with these five daily practices, which I'm happy to send to everyone, remember. But more importantly, I figured out one thing. I am not someone that loves what I do. My superpower is I learn to love what I do. That through gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and effective communication or inspiration, I am capable of finding the light, the love, and the lessons in everything I do. From taking out the trash, to having to pay payroll when you got nothing in the bank, to dealing with overhead and employees and COVID and moving and kids and three teenage daughters. I've learned to love it. I've learned to love being a dad of three teenage daughters. I've learned it. And you too can learn to love everything that you do by searching for, finding the light, the love, and the lessons in everything. Use gratitude, use forgiveness, use accountability in order to effectuate that perspective. Don't do something until you learn to love it. So you have to go write a brief. You sit there for a few minutes and you look for the light, the love, and the lessons in it so that you learn to love it so that time goes fast because you're productive, not miserable. That your life lives long because you're productive, not miserable. And I say lean into everything that you do because if you lean into it and you learn to love it, you will have more time, as Sadhguru taught me, and you will have more opportunity. And what it allows you to be an entrepreneur is time, money, and opportunity. And all three of those are a effect of learning to love what you do. I am here to tell you that none of you should worry about your why. Because it will come. It's natural. Your why is to be of service and of value and to help other people. Learn your what and learn to love your what and get help from who and how. And now I promise you, lean in, learn to love what you do, and you will live with the light, the love, and the lessons, the forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration that all of us deserve. You are health. You are wealth. You are happiness. Learn to get rid of what's interfering with it. And learning to love what you do gets rid of the interferences, voids, and shortages of how you're feeling and how you're seeing. Does that sound fair, my friend?
That sounds fair to me.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everybody, so much. Remember, please, download the playbook. All of the replays are there. Every training I've done is there. We got billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs teaching their lessons. Please join me. The playbook, like it. We can try out for 2-minute drill, $50,000 of cash and prizes on Bloomberg and Amazon. Email me if you want me to mentor you, coach you. Please, david@dmelcher.com. The 5 daily practices, any of my guides are available. Next week's training is time management. Please, everybody, remember most importantly, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. Have an unbelievable holiday. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.